What do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
Oh, what do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
We're back to that, huh? I say to you, what do you feel like doing tonight? And you say back to me, I don't know what you feel like doing tonight. Then we wind up sitting around your house with a couple of cans of beer watching a hit parade on television.
Let's go to movies.
Director!
This is a frightened city.
Wait for it! Director! Cut!
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for a new film talk show, Film Sociology, with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Hello, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Ryan Cummins is working the board, fresh from the Final Four weekend. Did they let you out of the stadium at all last week?
Oh, man, it was crazy.
It was crazy. So good to have you back, sir.
Thank you.
Sitting in with me today, two first-time guests, and I love mixing it up. This is better than Jon Favreau's dinner show. Roxana Caldwell, director of radio operations, is here. And I might add, I have to say this, one of the earliest supporters of film sociology, so we thank you for that. And a gentleman who you hear quite often Saturdays on WFYI, you've probably read him, you've probably seen him, he's all over the place.
How annoying.
He is the will-o'-the-wisp that is Dick Wolfsey. How are you, sir?
Good evening. Nice to see you, Matthew.
Well, it is, as usual, busy times. It's Friday since last week, and the sun has risen, and it's fallen, and the birds are out, and it's still spring, and, you know, the basketball game didn't stop civilization as we know it. So that's all right, and now it's time for baseball. And as a Tiger fan, I'm really depressed. Okay, so we talk about what is new in cinema, what is new and old on DVD, and some other miscellaneous stuff. I'll be playing two. Rock Stations aren't the only one that can do two for Fridays. Of two columns from Dick Wolfsey, which you'll hear a little bit later on. But first, a film that this is what happened. Here's the life of a film critic here at WFYI. Every now and then we will get screenings. Press screenings for movies that come up, and there are certain people that come up to me and go, "Hey, when this movie comes out, would you?" And they're usually the action films, the blockbuster films, but out of nowhere, this was great. My pal Roxana came up to me a while back and put her bid in for The Runaways,
yes, I did,
which opened last week, but we're in Indianapolis, so we finally get it this week. And
this is
the story of the biopic of the rock band from the 70s. And Roxana, give a little bit, because there's a reason why you wanted to see this film big time. So share us a little bit of insight.
Well, first of all, I'm just a Joan Jett fan and a fan of, you know, girl rock and punk rock. So I definitely wanted to see this movie. And it's actually based on the book by Cherie Curry, who's the lead singer of The Runaways. And she was only 15 at the time when the group came out, back in the early 70s, maybe 75. So it just looked like a really cool movie. You know, good chick flick, basically good rock and roll chick flick. So I just wanted to check it out. It was actually really cool. Kristen Stewart and Dakota Fanning star as Joan Jett and Cherie Curry. So I think that might bring in the younger audience and help, you know, the kids today discover this really awesome group from the 70s.
Can you believe we're saying the kids?
I know.
And no. Really, no, seriously, I mean, every girl rock band, you could, G-R-R-R-L, I mean, from L7 and on, that owe a debt of gratitude to the Runaways, because they had a little bit of fame, and it just kind of
fizzled
out. I was good. I was thinking of a better word. That's good. And to use a phrase that my colleague at Nouveau, Ed Johnsonat, reminded us, drugs are bad, and drugs in a rock band even worse. Yeah. So, all right, we're going to play for you a little clip. We're going to play the trailer and then a clip that involves Kristen Stewart as Joan Jett, Sherry Curry, played by Dakota Fanning, and their Machiavellian manager, played by, and I love saying this, Academy Award nominee Michael Shannon. Let's give it a listen.
In 1975, rock was a man's world.
You dogs will be lucky to get a gig singing in the shower.
Go sell Girl Scout cookies.
Until...
have the most chance of any group I've seen to tear this world apart.
You heard of me.
Have I?
I like your style. A little Bowie, a little Bardot. A look on your face that says I could kick the shit out of a truck driver. Joni, this is Joan Jett. You are?
Cherie.
Cherie. Cherie what?
Curry.
Cherie Curry. Is that your real name? Well, Cherie Curry, do you sing or play a musical instrument?
Yeah, I can sing. I won a talent show lip singing to David Bowie. Why?
Why? Ask the maybe great Cherie Curry. Read my lips. We love your look. We are choosing you to be a part of rock and roll history. Do you want to be in the band?
Are you kidding? You know any song with Quattro? Yeah.
Good. Learn one of her songs. I don't care which. Audition Saturday. Joan will tell you where.
Now, Raj, you are my guest.
Yes.
You first. Your thoughts.
I really enjoyed the movie. Mm-hmm. They did take a lot of liberties with the story.
Which movies do.
Yeah, and there is a lot of Hollywood sensationalism to it. But I really dug it. The music was great. The soundtrack's fantastic.
Joan Jett, who is an executive producer on this film.
She's an executive producer. Kristen Stewart was fantastic. There were moments when I actually forgot it was Kristen Stewart, which was good.
Right.
And
so get off her back, Twilight fans.
And Dakota Fanning was awesome. Yeah. I'm blown away that the girl's only 15. I mean,
well, that's a little bit out, but I'll get to that in a second. But yeah, there's a certain element to that. I think the idea, like I said, I hope the Twilight crowd, I hope as many people who read Twilight and go to and see the movie numerous times will go and take a chance on it, even though it's rated R.
Yeah.
But that's never really stopped employees at theaters anyway.
Yeah.
But I think at times the idea of finding out the history of this band and hopefully going and buying their music is a little more important than the film itself for me.
Yeah.
It is a standard band biopic. There was a rise, there was a fall, drugs were involved, sex is involved, and then it turns into a VH1 thing. But that being said, I still enjoyed it.
I did too.
I've never read Twilight. I haven't seen Twilight because, like Mr. Wolfsey and I, us reading Twilight is like being in Broad Ripple After Dark over the age of 30. You really have no business.
Right.
And so I don't quite understand the white hot hatred toward Miss Stewart and Mr. Patterson for that matter, because I don't read it and doesn't really bother me. So let's get the snarky thing out of the way. No, Joan Jett does not bite her lip or tussle her hair one single solitary time. Trust me, we looked.
Yeah.
And so on the flip side,
great.
Yeah, she's fine. I mean, and also it's not her film. I mean, Joan Jett is a part of this, and she and Fanning bounce off each other really well. And by the way, Kristen Stewart was pretty decent as the girl in Adventureland. So not since Hayden Christensen has there been such intense hatred for a person. Well, Mr. Wolfsey has one. We'll get to him in a little bit. Nick Cage. We'll talk about him later.
Okay, I was going to tell you what I thought of
I know you are.
I have an opinion about this film.
Oh, really? Go on.
Well, here's the problem, Matt. The 60s were so good to me, I don't remember the 70s.
Oh,
so I can't comment. There's the problem.
Well, you have two nostrils and not three, so I think you're doing okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Go see The Runaways.
No recollection of the 70s at all.
Go see The Runaways, and maybe some of it will come back.
Yes, actually, I do want to see Dick Wolsey listening to The Runaways. That would be all sorts
of
awesome.
See, I was teaching high school at the time. So I should know more about this, but
ta-da.
I must say also the costumes were awesome and the makeup is beautiful. I'm sorry,
that kind of punk slash glam.
Yes.
Yeah, they captured that really well. And one of the best uses of a high school talent show is Dakota Fanning's moment.
Yeah.
Okay, now with Dakota Fanning, last week I talked about the last song, the Miley Cyrus film, in which she's trying to get past her Hannah Montana-isms, and I said last week it was a necessary move, but it didn't necessarily mean it was a good film. Now, Dakota Fanning, a few years ago, for those who are in the film world, if you remember, she did a film called Hound Dog, which has also been labeled the Dakota Fanning rape film, because she plays a precocious 12-year-old who's a little too close to daddy and winds up getting raped by some local boys. Guess what? It was set in the Deep South. And the film sat on the shelf for a while. It played the film festival circuit, didn't really get picked up right away, and eventually it came out on the DVD, and it died. And I got to see it, and it really wasn't that good. It was kind of Southern fried melodrama that, Tennessee Williams would even scoff at. That being said, I understand she had to make a film like that so she could make a film like The Runaways, because, she was 15 when she made the film. Her character is 15. The manager even says, part of the reason why I'm putting you in this band is because you're jail effing bait, actual quote. And that taps into a very uncomfortable area for guys who were listening to rock back then. But what was also cool was they're girls, but they didn't have to be girly. Because also, think about this: there were no female drummers or bassists. And if you were female and you had a guitar, more than likely it was acoustic, unless you were Bonnie Raitt.
Right.
So the fact that this was all girl band, and the fun moment where they bring in boys during their band practice to throw things at them so they can get ready to be able to hold their own.
Yeah.
And I know some folks are asking. Okay, not folks, guys are asking. Is there? Yes. There's a scene with Kristen Stewart and Dakota Fanning, but it is used as a moment of bonding / intimacy, not exploitation.
Yes.
Let's just leave it. This is me saying this.
See, so I can't see that difference, personally. I'm not aware of that difference.
It can be. Well, if it's artfully done,
personally,
if it's
I'm
a
not,
good film.
Personally, I'm not aware of that difference.
We'll trade cards later. Okay, so... So anyway, go give this film a chance. I hope you get a chance to see it. And then go listen to The Runaways, because they are really good. Even if the film was slight on my girl Lita Ford, but that's a whole other issue.
I do want to say, I think it's really cool that they're getting all of this attention now, because I think it's just 10 years ago, The Runaways were out of print. And you could not find...
That's sad.
You could not find their music anywhere. I had an old cassette tape.
We all did. We all had the old cassette tape.
I think it's just really great. And kudos to Joan Jett.
Exactly. And my buddy Jeff in Georgia, who also saw the film and liked it, also said the one thing he pointed out was that there was absolutely no joy with this band. And I said, well, they were huge in Japan. And he goes, yeah, that's 4 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a dark, druggy, that thing you do. That's what you get here at Film Sociology. So overall, my thoughts on... And
that
I think
was a good movie.
Yeah, it was. It was. And we're going to take a short break in a moment, but a few shameless plugs. Don't forget, last week it started, the Tibbs Drive-In is open. Please go to a drive-in before they all go away. Please, please, please. This is also a dad project this summer, is taking my child to a drive-in movie before they all go away.
I grew up in Monticello, and we still have a drive-in.
You do?
Monticello, yes.
Okay, so there's two in Indiana that we know of. If you know of any others, msoci@wfyi.org. See, we had the Miracle Twin and the West Side Drive-In, Flint, Michigan.
And at that drive-in, there's also a church service every
there
Sunday.
There is every
really?
Sunday.
Really? Yes. Is there a swap meet on Saturdays?
There is not, but there in the summertime, there is a church service.
And when they get to Amen, everybody hunks their horn.
I've never attended
well,
the church
service. It's in my book, actually. Yeah. It's a weird thing, places to visit.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
Beep, that's beep. Terrific.
Now, are the collection plate gals on roller skates?
No, but they pass around a Kentucky.
Okay.
For money, they pass around a Kentucky Fried Chicken basket.
No, they don't.
They do.
You know,
and
that,
and it says on it, a wing and a prayer.
Oh, wow.
I have to go get that my own hometown culture. How am I missing out on that?
Yes, Ryan.
There's one up north off of U.S. 39. It's in Mechanicsburg.
Three.
So I know.
Excellent.
All right, that's it. Film sociology field trip. That's what we need. So we have that. Speaking of road trips, because, well, I have to do this. Tonight, tomorrow night, and then the next two weekends at Earlham College, there is a production of William Shakespeare's Othello, directed by my wife, Lynn. Yeah, it has to be done. And then April 23rd, 24th, and then the next two weekends at Mud Creek Players will be the production of The Three Musketeers, directed by yours truly. So I won't be around signing autographs as soon as the show is over. I have to finagle down and hopefully be loud enough that Mr. Wolfsey can hear us from his backyard. We'll see. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to talk about what is new on DVD and Blu-ray. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Naptown is nowhere near as sleepy as it sounds.
I say fooey to those who say there's nothing to do in Indianapolis. And we bring it to you on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast every week. It's a feature of our top 10 shows as voted on by music journalists across the city and our On Track artist, featuring a local recording each and every week right here on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast and WFYI HD2 Thursdays at 4 p.m.
Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know what I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point, WFYI.org, and on Mondays, it's available as a podcast. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey at WFYI.org. Ryan Cummins is working the board. Roxana Caldwell was here for the first segment. She had the run out because I think she wants to go see The Runaways again. And Dick Wolfsey is sitting in with me, the creator of Life in a Nutshell and many books and many TV segments. And I appreciate him finally coming on tonight.
My pleasure, Matt.
Because my first impression of you, sir.
Uh-oh.
Was you during a Fox 59 morning segment interrupting it and kissing Cody Stark in the parking lot of a movie at Cineplex. I don't know if you remember that.
Well, no, I mean, it's,
it was Cody. This was when I was doing film reviews up the street, and Cody had the great idea of sleeping out overnight while the basement dwellers, I'm sorry, Star Wars fans, waited in line for episode one, and we were doing some spots, and you were down there with the 8 crew, and while Cody was on live, you came in like a linebacker and just planted a big one on the side of his head.
Just to get on another station.
You did, and quite well.
The other thing I did, if I have to tell you this.
Please.
The other thing I did at that opening was I noticed that there was a certain coffee company nearby, and
sure.
I had this idea, and I had, because I always set these things up, and I had this guy who's standing in line, and I went up to him. I said, "So you're all excited?" He said, "Oh, yeah, I go to all the Starbucks opening." I said, "Starbucks?" He said, "Oh, yeah, this is a Starbucks opening." I said, "No, this is not a Starbucks opening. This is a Star Wars opening." Well, he played it straight the whole time.
Nice.
And I said, "And what do you think you're going to see at this opening?" And he opened up the bag and he said, and he took out something that we had got. He said, "The Attack of the Scones."
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And I still have a job. I still have a job. So, yeah.
I remember waiting. I did not wait in line. I only waited during the show. We did two mornings, or I went to, because I have things to do. And I remember waiting in line, and one guy said to me, is Kat Sadler going to be here? I went, no, no, not with you guys, yeah. No. The other, then the second day, the guy came, did you see the film? They had a press screening for us like the week before, and I said, yeah, I did. Well, what did you think? Mm-hmm. And I said, you got to watch the show. He goes, man, I've been waiting in line for 3 days. You better tell me how the damn movie is. But I will say there was, I remember we did bring on TV an actual girl, attractive girl,
yeah.
Dressed as a stormtrooper.
Oh, cool.
So that was pretty, yeah, insert favorite
that works
costumes
for,
and
that
role
works for me.
Common here. Yeah. All right, well, we want to go on to a new film that's on DVD that I think shamefully didn't get enough publicity, and hopefully more people will see it out on DVD now that it's out. But it's a new film from Nicolas Cage. Now, stay with me. I know I just said just stay with me, but it's called Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. Now, those in the indie film world got up in arms, including yours truly, when we heard that German director Werner Herzog, a wonderful filmmaker and documentary filmmaker who gave us films like Nosferatu, the Klaus Kinski version, Fitzcarraldo, Grizzly Man, and many, many others, was going to make a film called Bad Lieutenant, and hipster douchebags everywhere went, oh my God, they're going to remake the Abel Ferrara Harvey Keitel film from 1992. Well, it's remake by name and character ideas only. It is about a corrupt cop, played by Cage, who's investigating a series of murders in post-Katrina New Orleans. He is a bad cop. Takes drugs, takes money, takes certain sexual things, which we can't talk about on a family station. And, yes, it's true, there is an iguana cam. Here's the trailer.
Who's that?
Please, get me out of here.
You want me to get wet on account of you? Hey, man, I got on Swiss cotton underpants.
I'm gonna drown, sir.
Come on, we'll get the time of death from on top.
Please!
Come on, man.
It ain't worth it. You are crazy. Come
on. You okay?
The good news, Terrence, is I'll okay you to return to full duty. The bad news is that you'll be experiencing moderate to severe back pain.
Recognition of his leadership and tenacity, Lieutenant Terrence McDonough.
This is who we're looking for. His name is Donald Godshaw.
You up to this?
Why wouldn't I be?
Still haven't promised you back. You take medication for it?
Only what the doctor prescribes.
Got any illegal substances on you?
I'm Dave, the guy you robbed.
To make it right, you gotta come up with $50,000. Don't make me look for you, Terrence.
Am I stepping outside? I'd like to talk to you. I'm gonna give you a chance to make some money the old-fashioned way. With a cop protecting you.
You were crazy, man. I took you to a place.
It's amazing how much you can get done when you've got a simple purpose guiding you through life.
Call my own.
Stand against the wall.
Can empty your pockets, dump out the handbag.
You want a hat?
Yes.
What are these iguanas doing on my coffee table?
They ain't no iguana.
Yeah,
there are. Ain't no iguana.
Where's the 15,000?
Put that gun away.
Kill all of you.
To the break of dawn, baby.
You know the people are friendly there.
Do you think these guys care you're a cop?
Shoot him again.
What?
Fool. His soul's still dancing.
Back at home.
Also in the cast, the visually stunning Eva Mendes, who plays Cage's prostitute girlfriend. Val Kilmer, who's finally matched my weight. Vondi Curtis Hall, Brad Dourif, and, of course, the city of New Orleans. By the way, there have been a number of films shot in New Orleans. Not in these neighborhoods, I can tell you that. So kudos on this. I was a big fan of Abel Ferrara's version. It was a NC-17 redemption story with probably more. You get to see more of Harvey Keitel than even Mrs. Keitel needs to see, and that's really okay. But I actually have to say I actually enjoyed this more than I thought I would. Now Nicolas Cage, can you think of the last Nicolas Cage film that was really any good? I'll tell you, adaptation. Yeah. Now, some people will say Weatherman, some people will say Lord of War, but even then, It's been a long time.
National Treasure wasn't one.
God, no. Oh, heavens, no. No. Of course not. And even its sequel, you mean to tell me that if John Voight and Helen Mirren breeded, they'd make Nicolas Cage? No, I don't think that's possible. No. See, I love cinematic gene pools. Nah, that ain't one of them. So it's been a while since he's... And I know he's doing a lot of big-budget movies because he's got a bad manager who made bad financial choices for him or to him. But
he and Wesley Snipes have the same.
Oh my God! Well,
the
at
same
least,
tax accountant.
I say I think Cage pays a little more in taxes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
His films haven't quite gone to DVD yet, like right. Mr. Snipes. Although Mr. Snipes was in Brooklyn's Finest,
right?
Nobody in this room saw it. But it's interesting that since he won the Oscar for Leaving Las Vegas, and my gosh, it's been 15 years since that happened. But he's been taking a lot of big checks. Now, you know, every now and then he'll throw in something like adaptation, and this is one of them. I miss old, eclectic, weird Nicolas Cage, and that's what Bad Lieutenant is. It's a throwback to his kind of, Vampire's Kiss, Moonstruck, Valley Girl, where he was just enough off-kilter to just...
Raising Arizona.
Yeah, exactly. It is like that.
You know.
Well, he got an Oscar, and then he started doing Michael Bay action films. That's what.
So. What was the film where he's at Alcatraz?
That's The Rock.
That's The Rock.
You know, when The Rock is the best of your action movies,
yeah.
That's not saying a whole hell of a lot.
He was in Con Air, wasn't he?
And Con Air, wow.
Real bad and really bad hair extensions. I might add. Just awful. So I was stunned. Well, I guess if you're taking your date out on a Saturday night, that seeing a guy snorting crack with iguanas and hookers is probably not the top choice, and that's probably really a shame because that's far better than Knowing and the second National Treasure.
It's always interesting. You always talk about, when you talk about these films, you say it was a bad film, it was a good film, it was a bad film. But the truth of the matter is he can be a lousy actor in a good film.
Or the best thing about a lousy film.
Yeah, exactly, right. Mm-hmm. But exactly, it can go both ways. But in my case, I told you, I think that as a general rule, I think he's just kind of without affect, and I think he seems to me the same person in every movie. Wow. Even though some movies are better than others.
Right. I would say give this one a shot.
Okay,
I don't know if the missus would be up for it.
Yeah.
Because I occasionally will chime in, especially like when the daughter's here. By the way, when you have a child, you say you watch grown-up movies. You don't watch adult movies.
Oh, I understand.
That's right.
And you don't go to the drug store. You go to the medicine store. I understand that.
That's good.
It's all politically correct, right?
Well, I'm not going to say what anyway. But no, I would say check this out, especially for Cage, and because probably it's going to be many years before we see another loony performance like that. And actually properly loony, because I know he's in Kick-Ass, which opens next week. And, man, that's just... The advertising for that film is all wrong. It really is. If you know, Kick-Ass is the young kids dressed up as superheroes movie. Mm-hmm. Go find the Red Band trailer for that. It's completely different than the one they've been showing to kids in the last couple of months. So overall, here we are on Bad Lieutenant.
Now that was a good movie.
And then go watch the original, even if you see naked Harvey Keitel in it. Okay, now the big title on Blu-ray. Do you own a Blu-ray?
I do not.
Okay, that's all right. Yeah. We used to have a segment called If You Owned a Blu-ray. Right. So I guess I'll pass. If you owned a Blu-ray and you had the money, when Life in a Nutshell hits a million sales or it goes zinc.
Yeah.
Finally out are all three Lord of the Rings.
Ah.
Would you buy it on Blu-ray?
I would think I would.
You think you would?
I think I
okay.
would.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go.
Once I had Sound of Music, absolutely.
See, man of priorities, right there. See,
right?
Because I agree on that. I'm one of the guys. No, we don't have a trailer for it.
Oh,
sorry, Ryan. It's all right, man. You're checking. I always remember the press screening for the first Lord of the Rings, which, by the way, it's still going on right now. Because I saw three films in one day. And this is the plight of the film critic. I know, poor, pitiful me. I have a mahogany cross. Because if you're gonna be self-crucified, you might as well have the very best.
Right.
But I remember going to Greenwood for a 10 a.m. screening of the first Lord of the Rings. And as soon as that was over, I haul-tailed up to Castleton, to the old art cinema at Castleton Square Mall. and saw the Coen brothers' film, The Man Who Wasn't There, mm-hmm. with Billy Bob Thornton. Great film. And then went home, napped, and then went downtown and saw Vanilla Sky. Bad Tom Cruise film. But that's three films in one day. And then I had another one the next day, which was The Majestic, and then the day after that, the morning after I did TV and radio, and saw The Royal Tenenbaums. So five films in 3 days for work.
Is that a record, you think?
That's my record.
Oh, okay.
Now, I haven't topped that. Although seeing The Runaways and The Last Song in the same day, that's a bit. And then it was the first gorgeous day of spring. So anyway, first Lord of the Rings, 4 hours of setup. Second Lord of the Rings, more setup, but things are starting to get done. Things are actually happening. Last film, pretty good, not best picture material. And nine endings. So, I'm sorry, I voted for Mystic River if I had an Oscar ballot this year. Kill me. I love Boston Angst more than Frodo. So,
is there a bunch of walking going on?
Man, you know what? Did you ever play Dungeons & Dragons? Were you at D&D? Did you know the D&D guys?
A little bit, yeah.
Man, that first film was roll 6, walk. Roll 9, rest. Roll 6, walk. Roll 12, ponder about the ring. Man!
Kevin
seriously.
Smith, Clerks 2.
Yeah, Clerks 2 does address the Star Wars Lord of the Rings thing. And it's, come on, get on to it. So, and by the way, I know there is a scene at the end of Lord of the Rings, the last film. I can't prove it, but I can tell that there was one scene at the end of Lord of the Rings that was directed by Ian McKellen. Now, if you remember one of the nine endings, it's when Frodo wakes up in bed, and then the other hobbits come in, and they're celebratory, and they're kind of rolling around, and then there's Gandalf watching this with a big gleeful look on his face. I think Sir Ian McKellen went to Peter Jackson and said, "Dear boy, let me direct this." Because he wanted to watch young boys roll around in bed for you. And then Viggo Mortensen shows up, and then the short British guy with the big axe shows up. And it's like a Gore Vidal fantasy directed by Ian McKellen. I can't prove it. It just feels like it. So there. So, yes, Lord of the Rings is on Blu-ray. Mr. Wolfsey would buy it. I'll go to his house and watch it.
I like the ending when Frodo wakes up and he realizes that the whole thing was just about him running a little bed and breakfast in Vermont. Did you ever see that?
And he was married to Suzanne Plachet.
Yeah, that was
visually
that
stunning.
Was one of my favorite endings.
Although I was sick a few weeks ago and I sounded like Plachet today, so that was that was not good. Yeah, when you're torn between Suzanne Plachet and Mary Fran, that's a good place to be.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you, Bob Newhart. So overall, here's the thoughts on Lord of the Rings. It's not there. Come on, man, you're killing me. No.
It wasn't that great.
That's all. That's all right. We'll get to it. All right, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to get a double shot of Life in a Nutshell, two commentaries from Dick Wolfsey, and more from Dick Wolfsey himself. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Naptown is nowhere near as sleepy as it sounds.
I say fooey to those who say there's nothing to do in Indianapolis, and we bring it to you on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast every week. It's a feature of our top 10 shows, as voted on by music journalists across the city, and our on-track artist, featuring a local recording each and every week right here on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast and WFYI HD2 Thursdays at 4 p.m.
Oh, Roger! We're not alone.
We got guests.
You got what?
Guests. Yeah, guests. People. We've got guests coming over.
When?
Now.
Who are you?
Yeah, well, that's just like your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
And welcome back to Film Sociology. I'm your host, Matthew Soucy. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoucy@wfyi.org. I'm also on Facebook. Dick Wolfsey is sitting in with me. And before we talk with Mr. Wolfsey some more, and this has been fun. We're going to have movie night someday, and we'll stream it. But I want to play for you not one, but two cuts from the two-disc set Life in a Nutshell, which if you go to WFYI.org or you see Dick Wolsey on the street.
Yeah, because I have him in my car.
I know you do. I don't you have a trench coat with 30 copies in on the lining?
I got books. I got everything.
He's got everything in the trunk of his car and slacks in the car from, from time. And nice shirts you need them. So anyway, we're going to play two cuts. Here's the first one. It's called Kernel of Truth.
After 25 years of togetherness, my wife and I have some serious questions about whether our relationship can really continue any longer when we have such a fundamental disagreement about one aspect of our marital life, popcorn. Everything about popcorn, from the moment we get in the car to go to the movies to the point when the movie has ended, creates a disharmony in our otherwise perfect union. You're not going to get popcorn this time, are you, Mary Ellen? We're going out to a very expensive restaurant right after the movie. I have to, Dick. It's been a movie tradition for me since high school. Look, so was necking in the balcony, but we pretty much cut that out completely. Once we reach the theater, the tension rises. Dick, I'll find a seat. You wait in line for the popcorn. Oh, Mary Ellen, why do I have to wait in line? I don't want popcorn. And when I come into the movie theater, you'll forget to look around, and I'll walk aimlessly up and down the aisles while people stare at me and assume I'm all alone and have no one to sit with. Of course, I do wait in line. I buy the popcorn and a drink. Dick, why did you get the extra large? You know we can't eat all that. Look, Mary Ellen, the extra large is only 50 cents more than the small, and you get five times more popcorn. I already feel like I'm getting ripped off, and I don't want them to get away with it. Do you know that popcorn used to be a quarter? Yes, Dick, but the people in films are talking now. Another issue is butter and salt. My wife is a bit of a health nut, so she avoids both of those. But popcorn with no butter and salt? You have to be kidding. Why not just tear up styrofoam into tiny little pieces and put them in a bag? Enjoy. It'll taste the same. Then there's eating the popcorn. My wife takes one piece from the top of the box with two fingers, then places the popcorn in her mouth where she lets it melt on her tongue. Mary Ellen claims this gets her into a rhythm to understand and enjoy the movie. I believe this technique is practiced by the inhabitants of the third rock from the sun, or possibly a satanic cult in Utah. My wife's arm then moves up and down next to my face 1,100 times during the movie. I don't remember most of the films I've gone to because I'm hypnotized through most of them. Here's the right way to eat popcorn. Dig way down into the container, which spews popcorn all over the people on either side of you. Take an entire handful and shake the kernels up in your fist like a pair of dice and throw several into your mouth at a time. Then, while still chewing, reload and prepare to fire again. This is how Orville Redenbacher did it. You can look it up. God knows why there aren't instructions on the popcorn boxes. We take the popcorn home, and Mary Ellen sits in front of the TV watching old reruns of Bonanza. I hate that show, but I'm not saying anything. When Mary Ellen gets angry, that right arm packs quite a wallop.
You mean we can't bring up it's a story of a 50-year-old man with three 45-year-old sons? And Hop Singh.
Part of that sounded dirty this time when I listened to it. I don't know why, but
I don't know. Okay, then we got one more cut, and it's cut number 23, Ryan.
This is showing how stupid I am.
No, it's called Pirated Movies. It's not about the movies you can buy on East Washington Street.
No, it's not.
And really, you shouldn't. But it's about something else.
About how dense I am.
About dense?
Yeah.
We mean thorough, heavy.
No, I don't.
No, not that. We mean just dense. Okay, here we go.
I used to think I was fairly intelligent. As I once reported, I would have gotten into Mensa, the organization for really brainy people, but on my way to take the qualifying exam, I got lost. I must have a different kind of intelligence, because the other day my family rented Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, and I was pretty much at my wit's end. What in heaven's name is this movie about? I asked my son Brett. I'm finding this very hard to follow. Dad, he said, it's not your fault. You didn't see the first two pirate movies. It's like taking Spanish 3 without taking Spanish 1 or 2. That made me feel a little better, except that I failed Spanish 3, despite a year in an exchange program in Madrid at some place they called a university dad or something. The fact is I did see the first installments, Black Pearl and Dead Man's Chest, but I was still as lost as sunken treasure. After each movie, I felt like I had ship for brains. The problem of understanding movies has always plagued me, to use a pirate metaphor. I remember when my son was six and we first saw the movie about the green-tinted ogre Shrek. I guess you wouldn't want to make him angry, huh, Brett? I kidded him. Dad, you're confusing Shrek with the Hulk. You mean Shrek doesn't become the Hulk when you tick him off, I said? It's a little humiliating to not understand a movie about pirates. I mean, how difficult could it be? You have pirates, you have damsels, you have pieces of eight. Those were the good old days. In this movie, you have beating hearts ripped from sailors' chests, half-dead people who live in the walls of the ship, giant tentacled beasts called krakens, a sea goddess named Calypso, about a million land crabs, and pirates from all over the world in a corporate planning meeting. To me, pirates were always about pillaging and plundering. The idea they had a marketing strategy has taken a lot of the romance out of this swashbuckling thing. By the way, how did they all know about this marketing meeting? Did they check their Blackbeardy? The most common sound during the movie was, "Arr!" That was not the star Johnny Depp mimicking a pirate. It was my son's displeasure at the constant barrage of questions for me as I tried to understand the film. So, was anyone else as perplexed about the movie? I went to RottenTomatoes.com, a website chock full of critiques of current films. The very first review of Pirates I read said this, quote, "The movie is a convoluted, ponderous, joyless spectacle whose lack of charm is matched only by its incoherence." Hey, maybe I'm not so stupid, or maybe this guy should watch the film with his family just to help him understand it. My wife suggested I watch the movie again if I was still baffled. Gee, what a nifty idea. And maybe I'll take a course this summer in Algebra 2, you know, just to clear up those remaining pesky questions that have been dogging me for 45 years. By the way, I still enjoyed the evening with my family. Despite the confusing plot, a little on-screen blustering and swaggering is always fun. This weekend, all three of us are going to rent Ocean's 13. I saw Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 12. But I'm still a little nervous. I wish I hadn't missed the first 10.
He'll be here all week, folks.
Oh, that was a good last line.
Yeah, that was a good last line. You know what? No, I'm with you on the last Pirates of the Caribbean. I haven't seen that many negotiating deals since the NBA draft.
I know.
I didn't need that. No, I didn't ask for that. You made not one, not two, but three films based on a ride.
I wish I had said that.
Well,
yeah.
You can give me credit and send me a check for 15 cents every few months.
Okay,
that's fine. Yeah, and there's a fourth one. I'm so thrilled.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for chiming in with that.
Yeah.
Couple things, though. Do you not tell your wife that that's not butter they're putting on the popcorn source? It's oil.
Oh, we're going to go back to the popcorn.
Yeah, we'll go back to the popcorn
okay.
one. Because... Yeah. I tend to not eat. I stopped eating popcorn at the movies, except for one particular place landmark, because they actually serve butter, not oil, not black gold or.
Do they advertise? They admit they.
I think it actually is. Yeah. So and there is one recall. So
I mean, we're not the first people to make the observation what a ripoff the popcorn is.
No, of course, and that's where they make their money.
Of course, but I don't care about that.
Right.
I just amazing to me that I go to the theater up on 96th Street, and about 2 miles down the road, there's a place called it's some kind of seafood buffet, and for $7.95 for a guy my age, I can all I can eat for $7.95. And at the movie theater, it cost me almost that for a thing of popcorn.
So we should open the seafood buffet. Multiplex.
I like that idea.
I do like that. Ryan, get the backers on the phone.
But it's funny, you could get a pizza for the same price as the popcorn.
And you know what else does? I know we still have one place in town where you can have real food as opposed to fake food, and have movies. And I'm stunned that Indiana and Indianapolis kind of confuses me that we're one of the fattest states in the country, but we can't keep a Sonic, Krispy Kremes, or Hollywood Bar and Filmworks downtown.
I miss that place.
Oh, that's an interesting observation.
Can you believe that? You know, you would think, chili cheese tater tots and Krispy Kremes, which are just, and then just beer and nachos and movies. And that's not a slight on the wonderful place on 86th Street.
But you know, the Ted who went up to Chicago, and he's doing, the guy who owned Hollywood, and he's doing Gangbusters.
Well, of course he is, because people in Chicago know how to eat and drink and watch movies.
At the same time.
And by the way, buy booze on Sundays.
So where's the one place you're talking about?
It's up on 86th Street.
Oh, Greenbrier.
Cinema Grill.
In Greenbrier, right.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So go to that as well.
Right.
But I of course put more butter on at home than my wife does.
Right.
So I'm more of a I'm more of a hypnotic guy than you are. I know you grab it like it's a pouch of Redman.
Well, the other thing, my wife, the other thing is my wife. I mean, it's this is a weird thing when you're sitting next to somebody who you've been intimate with, but she won't let me put my hand in her popcorn. She won't let
me. Okay, that's not a song. That's not a jazz song.
No,
that's what he actually means that.
I mean that. She has to sprinkle it in my hand. So I don't want your
really?
Hand. Yeah. I mean, how weird is
okay,
that?
Okay, I mean this with all due respect to yeah. you and your wife. Did you ever see the movie Diner?
Oh, sure.
Do you remember the scene with Mickey Rourke and the popcorn? Do you think it was because of that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I don't mean, this is not a slight on the, I'm just,
I'm
asking intimate questions with my guests. And
no,
I just,
that's fine.
Because I tried that once in high school on a date.
Yeah.
I didn't do as well as Mr. Rourke.
People
so.
Have weird habits when it comes to them. I mean, you know, you're sitting next to somebody who you kiss, and yet if she has a bottle of soda and I drink it, she wipes it off. What is that all about?
Really? We know where you've been.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right.
You don't even do this, like, the two straws, like
yeah,
the air at the
I
soda
mean,
shop?
Yeah, enough of this personal talk.
I got to go to the movies with you and your
No,
wife.
You don't.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, or, yeah. no, you come over.
Would you let me put my hand in your popcorn?
Yes, I would. I know where you've been.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid.
There you go.
Jeez,
when I was a kid, we weren't afraid of that stuff.
Us TV, radio, and also, you know what? I would even sit next to you, not the space between.
Okay. But now, let me tell you why you don't want to sit next to me.
Why?
Now we're getting to the second thing.
Epilepsy.
No. Because I am a very linear person. And all of the movies that you're talking about, you know you're in bad shape when you turn to your 8-year-old son and you say, why are people jumping off the ship? And he says, Dad, it's the Titanic. Did you just walk into the movie theater? I mean, the truth of the matter is I like a movie that doesn't have 12. And I once wrote a column about this, and I think they should have signs that say, flashback coming, because otherwise it just confuses me.
So Pulp Fiction was a real headache for you?
Oh, are you serious?
Memento.
Oh.
We'll see what else. Out of Sight.
I didn't see that one.
You should see. Well, it's got
Memento and even Duplicity. I just had no
Duplicity,
idea.
Okay, that was another one. I was going to bring that up.
Wow.
Michael Clayton. There's another, okay,
yeah.
here's my job. When I have you over, because I will have you over. there is a feature on the Memento DVD. I know, because this took me 8 attempts.
Right.
There's a little, one of the features is that there's a psychological exam.
Yes.
And once you pass the psychological exam, you can see Memento in chronological order.
Oh, and there was also a movie that was all backwards. What was the movie that went backwards?
There's a few of them.
But there are a few of them that go backwards, right.
But there's one, you can see it from start to finish. The problem is, you can't stop it. You can't pause it. It runs in its entirety. And because I have a wife and a child, it took me 8 attempts to get through this because my daughter would start to cry. You know, she was very young then. Or, you know, my wife and I would have to go out to dinner or something like this. And, like, sitcom husband, you're like, no, honey, I want to watch this in order.
So you enjoy being challenged.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, foreign films, nonlinear. Right. I was going to ask you if you were going to brush up on your Russian period ensemble film, Voltaire. But no, it's okay.
I'm just intellectually lazy. You give me a nice movie like 12 Angry Men. I know
I love 12 Angry Men.
And it ends. You'll Inherit the Wind. I know where it
love
begins.
Love Inherit the Wind.
I
do you know what's do you know what's on my Facebook page? I do not think about things I do not think about. That
great.
Are words to live by,
I know.
Said by the brilliant Frederick March in the film. Remakes, both remakes, not bad.
The one for TV with
George C.
Scott
and Jack Lemmon, who also did Inherit the Wind.
I didn't like that.
I know. It's 12... Many Men of Many Colors, but
no. I'm talking about the remake of
Inherit
the Wind.
Yeah, that one's it's 101. But no, watch Frederick March and Spencer Tracy. That is a film
equivalent
to a heavyweight boxing match.
No, it's brilliant.
Those two go at and Gene Kelly go at each other tooth.
Well,
and
everybody
nail.
Around that table.
Dick York. Dick York
star.
Was there. The guy had a career before Bewitched.
That's right.
You forget there. Hey, look, there's Sam's husband on trial.
Everybody on that table became
just a fantastic film. And then I got to see Richard Thomas do it on stage.
He did
it at the Mirage last year. Really, really cool. So a lot of fun. So now with you and the missus, do you take turn? Even I mean, how many years have you been married?
30 next month.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Do you take turns, or is there is
do
there
we take turns?
No,
what?
Movie wise. I mean, is it you pick one and she picks one, or
no, that's
what
a
have you?
That's a good question.
Because I know, like Roxana, who was in here earlier, I apparently need to talk to her better, her not yeah. so better half.
Yeah.
And I know, especially couples in the early stages of marriage, where you know you pick one and she picks one, and that sort of.
Yeah,
thing.
I think we sometimes do that. I'm occasionally there'll be a movie like that I really want to see, and then she'll go with me begrudgingly. But you know, she's a pretty good sport. But I think it's tough for her with me because I'm always asking questions. And you know, one of the problems is I'm a very impatient person, so I'll ask her a question and she'll say to me, of course you don't know why he's doing that. Nobody knows why he's doing that. We don't know that yet, but I want to know now. I don't want to wait 40 minutes. I want to know now. You know, why is that person jumping off the building? We don't know why he's jumping off the building.
I think you and my daughter should sub when I'm not here one time. You guys would do brilliantly. Yeah. So.
And previews, you know, I even bother during a preview. I'll say, why? She said, it's a preview. I have no idea how to answer that question.
That's how they get you.
That's how they get you. That's right.
So tell me about what was the first film you can remember that really rung your bell in a good way?
I remember the first movie I ever saw.
Okay, let's hear it.
Around the World in 80 Days.
Really? 1956?
Yeah, that's the first movie.
David Niven, a slew of everybody. You know, Sinatra had a cameo. Everybody at the Screen Actors Guild had a cameo in that one.
I actually remember going to that, coming home in the car. Isn't that funny? No one's ever asked me that, but that's the first film I ever saw. Yeah. I can remember my first – ooh, how do I – well, we have an adult audience.
That's fine.
I can remember my first sexual response to a movie.
Really?
May I tell you?
Oh, please do. Actually, I'm not afraid. I'm going to get closer. Okay, let's hear it.
I actually remember this. I was probably 6 or 7.
Ah, good.
And I was watching in the living room Boy on a Dolphin.
Sophia Loren. Yeah.
And that's what I
knew.
Oh,
my goodness.
That's when I knew I was a man.
quite possibly the greatest wet T-shirt moment in
there
cinema history.
There you go.
My dad was a big Sophia Loren fan. Yeah. I still am. I know she played Daniel Day-Lewis's mother in the musical Nine.
She
still
looks
stunning.
Oh, she's unbelievable.
Like you, to steal a line from Woody Allen in Annie Hall, I never had a latency period. I never found girls icky, and women were definitely not icky.
Right,
so
right.
My story was, when I was 10, I told my mother I wanted to date Raquel Welch.
Ah, yes.
And my mother fronted me on it. She goes, what would you do on a date with Raquel Welch? I was 10. Now, if I was 11, I had a different answer. But I said, you know, take her to McDonald's.
Right.
And then what?
Yeah.
Take her to my bedroom, and then what? And I said, show her my baseball card. No slang. Now I have this image of, you know, on the sitting up on the end of the bed, and of course she's dressed in the 1 million years BC outfit, and I'm going, that's Al Kaline.
Right.
That's George Kell. He does commentary. That's Pete Rose. He plays for the Reds. And just, you know, I'd have a different answer back then, but you know, I didn't know what I would do, but I would hang out with him. But yeah, Anne Margaret. We were joking earlier. I talked about the film The Dirty Dozen at the IMA a few months back, and I introduced a film, Umbrellas of Cherbourg, with Catherine Deneuve. And there was all these guy mission films. And I'm like, if Carlo Ponti or some other producer had just made an action movie with Claudia Cardinale, Julie Christie, Catherine Deneuve, Sophia Loren, Margaret, Diane Carroll, that thing would make more money than Avatar in 1965 dollars. I'm just saying. So, wow. I can't talk about the first time I saw Body Heat because this is a family show.
Oh,
but,
that was a good one,
but
too.
That was 11, so that's when...
Wow, you
were
young.
That was when things were percolating.
You're talking about the one with...
Kathleen Turner and William Hurt.
And William Hurt, right.
Yeah, there was... And the great story on that was... And, you know, there was that period where she was absolutely gorgeous, and then she turned into a man. And
you're right.
But the great... Oof. She still has a great voice. Yeah. But... my wife and I, on our honeymoon, we did a week in Paris and a week in London. Mm-hmm. And this was 2001, April of 2001. And when we were in London, she was playing Mrs. Robinson in a stage production of The Graduate. I didn't go.
Oh.
Because it just seemed odd to go see a woman who helped me in certain ways cinematically on my honeymoon. That's just a bad idea.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
And it's a shame. You know, it was great on that. So, what was the first movie you took your wife to?
Oh, wow. That's a good question.
Ball State degree at work, sir.
Do you know something? I can remember. Isn't that a good, interesting question? I can remember. See, I'm very food oriented, and I can remember the first restaurant we went to and
really?
What we had for dinner, and that drives her crazy.
Oh no! Now I have to know. Where'd you go to eat?
Oh, it was someplace up in Detroit, and I remember whatever.
Okay,
it doesn't. But I actually remember that.
Okay.
But I don't remember the first movie. I wonder if she does.
Well, you have to come back and give us a report on that.
I will have to ask her. But that we certainly did love to go to movies, and we definitely have different ideas. My wife doesn't like a lot of violence.
Ooh, okay.
She doesn't like a lot of violence, and that sometimes creates a problem because a lot of these movies have violence.
Or as my wife puts it, made by boys for boys.
Yeah, exactly. That's right, exactly. Right. So we try to avoid those movies, so...
Well, the first film I took my wife to when we were dating was, and I let her pick. This is a big deal for a movie nerd. Is, you know, I'm going to let the other person pick the movie, no matter how wrong or how right they could be. And she picked. It was called To Jillian on Her 37th Birthday, and it was a film based on a play. She'd seen the play, and it's Peter Gallagher and his eyebrows. He is a widower, and he keeps. At the summer beach house, keeps having encounters with his dead wife, played by Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh.
The hottest dead woman ever.
Right.
And Lynn knew that Michelle is my queen. Michelle's the one, you know, Matt, let's go. I'm gone. Lynn, Emma, it's been great. I'm out of here. And so I said to her before the movie starts, I said, you know who's in this? Mm-hmm. And she's like, yes. And I said, that's okay. And she's like, yep. 2 hours from now, the movie's going to be over, and I'm still going to be sitting here. She's a keeper.
I just remembered.
Yes.
I do remember the first movie we ever saw together, but it was on television.
Okay, I was saying, and then there was the one you actually watched.
No, well, it's funny you should say that. No, that's funny you say that. We met in Columbus, Ohio, and we met at a friend's house, and I was over to see them, and I was staying somewhere else. And she was staying with these friends, and they went up to go to sleep, and we watched, and forgive me, you'll know this, and I won't, the Hitchcock movie where you see the ski.
Spellbound?
Spellbound, yeah.
With Gregory Peck and Ingrid Bergman. Yeah. Great
that
film.
That was the first movie, and we saw that together.
Nice.
On television, but I don't remember the first. So she'll be proud that I remembered that.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's a great
movie.
Film.
That's a great
love
film.
Love Hitchcock.
And we do love Hitchcock, yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. What have you watched recently? Doesn't matter if it's new or old, but recently.
It doesn't matter if it's new or old. Well, we did, of course, see Avatar.
Dances with Smurfs.
Oh, you know what we just saw that we absolutely loved?
What?
You know, this is an interesting topic. I'm sitting in this film, this movie, with probably other adults and with their kids.
Yes.
It's the new animation one.
How to Train Your Dragon.
How to Train Your Dragon.
Right.
Am I the only adult laughing in the movie? I laugh out loud, and my wife does too sometimes. She says, are we the only two people that find this funny? I thought it was adorable.
I think for a lot of parents, they feel like they're doing time.
But it was, did you see it yet?
I have not. My smarter two-thirds did. Emma's the kids' film correspondent. She gave it a high recommendation.
Oh, it was just delightful. Now, there are people who are going to say that it's left-wing propaganda.
Okay.
Because I know.
Well, then, also when it says that, you know, Bush was wrong. I mean, that's about.
No, it's just, it basically says there's something to be said for getting along with your enemies and understanding them. And that
yes.
Some people's, that's baloney. It was delightful.
It's a dragon.
It was a dragon.
It's a dragon.
That's right.
And, you know, it didn't help if you say to the dragon, you're either for us or you're against us. And you wear a suit with Mission Accomplished in the background.
Right.
No, that's a whole other thing.
Well, they said that about Avatar, too, of course.
And that was subtle. That was about as subtle as
not too
this
subtle.
Thing. No,
but you
could not.
Still enjoy it.
And I really
You know, my theory is, without getting into politics, if you want to do a right-wing movie, then be a right-wing producer. I mean,
well, they did. It was called American Carol, and nobody saw it.
I don't even know, yeah.
See, it's really okay. No, but so, you can't sleep. You put something in to help calm your nerves. What do you put in to calm your nerves? What's something that, or if you flip it on and it's on, you have to give at least 20 or 30 minutes of viewing of it before you go back to sleep?
Ask me that again.
A film that you can watch at any time, anywhere, any place. Because I don't like asking, what's your favorite movie? Something that you can watch anytime, no matter what.
Oh, you're going to laugh at me.
Please.
I'd
love to.
you mean, I guess what you're saying, if you were surfing around.
Yep, and you see it, and you're like,
and
oh.
Even though I've seen it a million
yep.
times. you're going to say Birdman of Alcatraz.
No, that's fine.
I love that movie.
Burt Lancaster is a bad mofro in that, as is the late, great Carl Malden. Yeah. And Lancaster was great in that, too. But no, absolutely.
I just love that film. And I know I was disappointed when I found out it probably wasn't all that true. That I recently
movies tweak with actual events.
Apparently he was a real SOB the whole time he was there.
But not if you're Burt Lancaster.
Well, no, that's the point. And he actually, just a point of interesting trivia, he never had his birds at Alcatraz. He had his birds elsewhere, but as the man told me who was there with Burt Lancaster, if they had called it the Birdman of whatever other prison it was,
right?
It's like why they call it, we're getting our time's up.
No, it's fine. No. Finish your thought.
I should know this. I'm in television. I should be able to take a cue. But the what's the museum up in Crawfordsville? Heavens.
Oh, the Ben-Hur, Ben-Hur Museum.
Why
basically.
Do they call it the Ben-Hur Museum? Because if they called it the...
whatever else.
They wouldn't go.
Right.
That's right.
And we'll talk about Gore Vidal writing Ben-Hur later. Dick Woolsey, thank you so much. I know this is part two, because you have to do your homework assignment on the first film you watched with your wife.
Yes.
And to bring your wife in, it'll be Dr. Soucy, film therapist.
I like that.
All right, you can hear Dick Woolsey Saturdays on WFYI. Go to WFYI.org for Life in a Nutshell, or find him on the street. Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, everybody, listening and emailing and texting and what have you. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.